What did Jesus do to transform the human understanding of the Sabbath? Welcome to Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas from the School of Theology and Joe Galusha, Professor of Biology. I'd like to pass that question on to you. What did Jesus do to transform our understanding of the Sabbath? And the question assumes that it needed to be transformed.
Well, I think that it appears to me, and you know, I want to be very careful about the subject because I think that the Jewish community gets hammered by Christians very gratuitously. I think that it appears to me that in Jesus' day that the Sabbath was surrounded by a lot of well-intentioned provisions that were designed to protect it, but people had gotten lost in the provisions and had lost the central ethos of the Sabbath.
And this is connected with what we talked about before, building a fence about the law.
Yeah.
They even have laws, for example, you can't go hunting on Sabbath, but if a deer happens to go into your house, they spelled out the ways that you could sit in the doorway until after sundown. See? So it was just really amazing, some of the things that they could make.
Mm-hmm.
My own sense is that the memory verse, the Sabbath was made for the Sabbath,
not for man
for the Sabbath,
yeah,
is a key transition. Because even as a child, I remember learning what to do and what not to do on the Sabbath. And there was quite a list of things that I couldn't do.
And that's because you were such an enthusiastic child. But go ahead.
I think that was. There was a certain height my pants could be when I walked along Lake Michigan, but I couldn't get wet above the knee. And frankly, we were not allowed to ride bicycles at that in those days. And what was a transformation for me when I began to see that, in fact, Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for us, not us for some arbitrary event that was set into place to kind of curb our pleasure.
And I have an acquaintance who is Jewish in Oregon, and he said there's a big difference between the way you deal with the Sabbath and I do in our communities. I said, what is it? He said, your focus is on keeping it so that you don't do it any damage. He says, where I live, we celebrate it. We are happy when it comes. We rejoice. We share fellowship and family and food. That's what he said. We celebrate the Sabbath. And that was a pivotal moment in my thought.
I can see how that would change the way one looks forward to that. And I think that that is also a maturing attitude,
yeah,
where in fact we see what can be done and the pleasant, positive fellowship and even worship that we can enjoy on that day.
I like to think about the things I don't have to do on Sabbath.
That's right. As one of my relatives said, Sabbath for me is not doing anything that you have to do on other days. See, and that's, I think, a very helpful way of dealing with it. When we were in Germany, and I think this is an important thing, sometimes I think a too restrictive attitude is what you can do on Sabbath is problematic. Now, for those of who are familiar with the way most Adventists, traditional Adventists, keep the Sabbath, we're pretty careful. We don't play games, this type of thing. And the result of that is when sundown comes on Saturday night, we watch our clocks, and then there's a sense of liberation. Well, when we went to Germany, it was troubling for us that the Germans weren't quite ready for Sabbath at sundown as we thought they would. And on Sabbath, they were a little more open with the types of things they'd do. They'd take a soccer ball along and so on. But what was the most astonishing thing for us was over there when we went to sundown worship.
You mean on Saturday night?
On Saturday night.
Yeah.
With young people there, with teenagers there. It was almost as if they were reluctant to let the Sabbath go. Worship would go on 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half hour, 45 minutes after sundown. It's almost as if it said, we're going to extend, you know, for practical purposes, we'll send Sabbath to Sunday morning, you know, so we just don't worry about it. And I think that sense of reveling in the Sabbath. And there's one text in Scripture that I want to tuck in here. It's amazing because we have probably been haunted by the Puritan rules against breaking the Sabbath. But there's a fascinating quotation, Exodus 23:12. 6 days do your work, but on the seventh day do not work, so that your ox and your donkey may rest, so that the slave born in your household and the foreigner living among you may be refreshed. It's not just for you. It's the whole member of your household.
So except, Alden, somebody has to explain to me why wives do not show up in that list. And I've had women, quite a few of them, ask me, the ox, the ass, the slave, and the foreigner are listed, but no wives are listed.
Well, if you read the commandment, it doesn't forbid the women to do anything either. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath. In it thou shalt not do any work, thou, nor thy son, nor thy daughter, thy manservant, nor thy slave, maidservant, thy ox, nor thy ass, nor anything that is their neighbor. The woman is not forbidden. That's why they can prepare food on Sabbath. No, I think the concept
that's precisely the point that's raised.
Yep. It has more to do with the sense of corporate personality, which is an Old Testament way of saying that everyone is wrapped up in the male. So when Achan is stoned, for example, everything connected with Achan was destroyed. His whole family, his children, his animals, even the wealth he'd gotten was all destroyed. That's a concept which we don't understand today, but that's very much Old Testament. So you don't have to list the wife separately.
She's already listed.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that is a very interesting thing to me, this idea of a corporate performance.
Same thing happens with the Philippian jailer upon his profession of faith. Yep. It says he and his whole household were saved.
You're right.
And in Africa, sometimes I know there have been places where the chief comes with his whole community and says, we'd say, no, you got to each one make a decision. You go to a corporate community, they make decisions corporately, and I think we ought to do everything we can to honor that. Now, one of the practical questions, and then we'll look at some of the things from Jesus, but the practical question I want to put on the table right up front here is, how does one keep the Sabbath literally in a modern secular world?
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I have a war against the word literally because I'm not sure what it means. But anyway, I'll answer your question.
Do it with precision.
Okay.
In it thou shalt not do any work.
Well, I think that, you know, one piece of that would be that it's not a day on which to routinely earn your living.
Okay.
I think that's the primary for me. It's not the scientific definition of work that applies. Force times distance equal work, as I recall. Okay, then you're getting out of bed, you have already worked. I think it's not a routine day on which you earn your living. That's what I think a primary element would be.
Okay.
I think that's right. I agree. My own sense is that what matters is that we get up and we go about preparing to worship God. Now, on some days that may be in nature. On other days, that may take us to a hospital room to kind of sit and share God's blessing quietly. Often, most often, I think in our community, the opportunity to gather in Sabbath school discussion, in church singing, fellowship, and worship, those are key moments. And those are things that will refresh the soul, which is my sense as to what the Sabbath is about.
Yeah, and I think another ingredient here is that, you know, when you're not using this day in a routine way for work and what you normally do, there's a certain sense of joy and liberation, and I sense it on the campus on Friday nights. If you go to Vespers, there's a very relaxed atmosphere because students are saying, this is the one evening where we don't worry about homework because the Sabbath has come and It's our evening to be free of that, because Saturday night they crank up the homework again. See,
that's right. I want to tie a word that Alden used earlier. I like the idea of reveling in the Sabbath. You mentioned that earlier, and it caught my attention. I think that characterizes the spirit I would like to have in my Sabbath, in my heart as Sabbath approaches.
Does that include a nap, Joe?
That might be later.
Yeah, in the afternoon, I'm saying.
That's right. But I like the idea of reveling in something. And that is an attitude, a series of behaviors that are reveling-like that I'd like to aim at myself.
I have a rule at my house when people come for dinner is that we sit around and we visit afterwards, but it's perfectly okay to have a nap while being part of the conversation. We do reserve the right to laugh at you if you have a nap, but other than that, there's no cost. So.
Interesting.
But, you know, it's interesting how that – you talk about reveling. It's one of the joys to be in community with other people and still be able to have a little nap.
You know, and this idea of doing things on Sabbath, because we are liberated, and I like to use the phrase that it is a liberating prohibition. A liberating prohibition, because now you're free. You're not allowed to do all those other things, you see. And I've noticed a number of years ago when I was doing some seminars down in Florida in the Methodist community. Now, the vast majority of Christian communities have lost all sense of sacred time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem for Adventists because we've almost always taken our Sabbath keeping from Sunday keeping communities. That's why European Adventists reflect European attitudes and British Adventists reflect British. You know, the British Sabbath is much more restrictive than the European one. But when you actually look at what we can do, and what we should do, I think we need to take Jesus' example much more seriously. Now, there's one outrageous statement that I would like to suggest. I think it was my colleague Malcolm Maxwell a number of years ago who made this statement. In Mark 2, 27, 28, where it says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath." Now, scholars agree that when Jesus was on earth, his sayings were in Aramaic, and the phrase for Son of Man actually means human being. So if you want something really wild and radical, the Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath, therefore human beings.
Oh, preside over the Sabbath.
Yeah, and that's almost the sense of Psalm 8, you know, which celebrates human beings.
Well, Son of Man also has messianic or trans-historical overtones. So how do you know that doesn't apply here?
Oh, I think either one could apply. I just think that, you know, when God has gracious things in mind for us, they're just wonderful things that he does. Now, there's one other aspect that we need to touch on in the last few seconds here, is Jesus healing miracles.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus went out of his way to heal on the Sabbath. He has five spectacular healing miracles all done on the Sabbath. One was a woman who had been ill for 18 years. Another, a man who had been ill for 38 years. And Jesus chooses to do that on the Sabbath. So, when we think about the Sabbath, it's a special gift to us. And one of the things that we look in the Old Testament, there's actually a promise that there will be a Sabbath in the New Earth. Now, next time, we start a cluster of lessons on Christ's death and the law. We've had more gracious open studies, but now we're going to look at the law, and we'll be doing that next time. My thanks to both of you for helping, and to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.